Hey everyone, welcome to another Hyperspace Broadcast minisode, an episode where instead of discussing something that aired on Toonami, we discuss usually another animated work, typically something Toonami adjacent. This week, we're discussing Akira Toriyama's earlier work, specifically Dr. Slump. I'm Michael Doak.
And I'm Peter Eby.
And you have seen this before. My only exposure to this manga slash show was the various times that it's crossed over with Dragon Ball.
Right.
There's one like point in the original Dragon Ball where Goku visits Penguin Village where this takes place. And then it happens again in Dragon Ball Super quite oddly.
Oh, yeah. That was awesome.
It makes way more sense in Dragon Ball for some reason. I mean, I guess Super's also pretty fucking silly, but...
When Dragon Ball's like, he made it directly after Dr. Slump.
Yeah, right, exactly. So this is a... I mean, we watched the anime, obviously, which was started in 1981. The manga was first serialized in 1980. And we also watched the second movie, which was made in 1982. Why did we watch the second one? Is it just because it was feature length?
That's right. It's a feature length movie. The other ones are kind of more like, you know, little short, short film, just kind of fun little movies. This one like is the first and only feature length Dr. Slump movie.
Okay.
It's a bit more significant.
That would be HoYoYo Space Adventure, of course.
Hell yeah.
So... Yeah, Dr. Slump is basically a show about the titular doctor, or I suppose the eponymous doctor, Senbei Noramaki, who goes by Dr. Slump, at least that's what it says on his baseball cap, or sometimes shirt, who makes a robot of what appears to be a little girl, but somehow she passes for 13.
The fact that they make fun of all the time, they just put her in seventh grade for the hell of it, and it's like, you look like you're like eight.
And there's like one of her classmates looks like maybe a 13-year-old. Every other one also looks like they're about eight or nine.
This show doesn't have like a lot of internal logic.
No, it doesn't.
It's
course
a very
not.
Goofy,
it's
a crazy world.
It's a show where the sun is brought up in the morning by Ultraman using a fishing pole, and then the sun brushes its teeth and sweats from its own heat. Like,
yes. Well,
it's a totally goofy show.
If you were the sun.
I mean, yeah, I guess. I feel like I'd be used to it probably, but who knows?
No, we'll point out. So we together watched the first episode of the anime, and that's it. And I'm talking about the original anime that aired in 81. There was a later one in the 90s.
Remake.
That they kind of, yeah. I have watched about 80 episodes of the original anime because I really got into it. And it's just, to me, it's like a really fun, dumb, just funny show that you just put on the background and watch, or just, I don't know. There's something about it that's very relaxing to me because there's basically virtually no conflict.
Yeah, I can understand that. It is.
Yeah.
I mean, also just the character design and like the design of the world is so
it's super charming.
Like soft is the word that I'm thinking of, which is actually interesting. I was reading, I don't remember where I was reading it exactly, but I was reading someone talking about how Toriyama, being the guy who made Dragon Ball, was basically taking a dude who did these like really cartoony like gag mangas, and then he started doing this action manga, while at the time most action mangas looked like Fist of the North Star, which as ludicrous as the characters look, is not cartoony in any way.
Perhaps exaggerated masculine, but still like hyper masculine and crazy versus
like
anything in Dragon Ball.
It's not cartoony at all. I would not call it that. So, but because Toriyama did this thing and then Dragon Ball went on to become this humongous phenomenon, it influenced a lot of the stuff that followed it. Like One Piece is obviously influenced by like design wise, etc. I mean, for some reason, I'm drawing a blank on other big shonen shows that I haven't watched. So,
there's a lot of jump stuff.
Naruto, there we go.
Sure. Yeah, whatever.
I know my
kids
stuff,
and your Naruto
clearly.
And your Bleaches. The main character really is Avrile, the which is the pronunciation I'm choosing to use for this because it's
yeah,
a very difficult
sure
to pronounce
that that's
name.
The standard.
Yeah. And she is a super powerful robot, and the whole premise of the show is like she has to adjust to, you know, quote unquote normal life in this insane town.
Normal life in a town where a pig with a fucking microphone strapped to his head announces that morning has come
and says cock-a-doodle-doo. and she basically has to like adjust and, you know, try and convince people she's not a robot.
Yeah, right. You know, this is a
which
really interesting
flagrantly disregards.
Yeah, right. This
by
is a really
your own
interesting
head
way to conduct the Turing test. Like that's basically what this show is.
Well, it only starts with that as like the barest of premises.
Well,
because
yeah,
it's like
sure.
Basically,
but
everyone, no one really thinks she's a robot, but everyone is just like constantly shocked by the stupid shit she does because you know this doesn't really have like a consistent narrative so much.
Yeah,
it's just a funny show.
All.
You know?
Yeah.
So the first episode is a lot of like robot out of water comedies, sort of, you know?
Yeah, that's fair.
It's
now I
it's,
have,
oh, blend in with these kids. Okay. Can you kick the can? Yeah, I'll kick it. I'll kick it across the entire planet.
Oh yeah. Yeah. They're like shot putting or whatever. And
she's
gym.
Just super strong.
Yeah. Now I do have to ask something. You were like, well, I don't think we should just watch the movie. I think we should watch the first episode as well.
Yeah.
Just out of what was your reasoning behind that? Because it's not a difficult show to like get a hold of, nor, as you said, is there any real like narrative thread running through it?
I thought that from what I remembered, the second movie, like while it is very goofy, still had like a narrative in it. Like it had a thread through mm-hmm. it, and it was in that sense pretty different from the main show. So in order to get a base for like what the actual show is like, I wanted to make sure to watch an episode of that.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
And even from then on, like there's a lot more, you know, every episode of the show is just self-contained and often just two of its own episodes, you know, two mini episodes in one.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's
they introduce
honestly
new characters who come back into play, but otherwise it's like,
sure.
Yeah, there's no arcs in Dr. Slump.
Yeah, it's like fucking, I don't know, a cartoon show, frankly. Like most of those
sure.
are split, you know, two episodes, two half
yeah, like
hour,
Dexter's Lab or
not continuous whatsoever.
So getting into the movie, the movie introduces the concept that this character that we know and love, Professor
the teacher, Mrs. Midori Yamabuki.
Yamabuki, that's right. Yamabuki-sensei turns out to actually be an alien, because why not? Or sort of an
except
alien.
Except she's not. She just randomly found a rocket, launched herself from Earth to this alien planet where they decided to take her in, raise her as a daughter, and then send her back to Earth because she
yeah.
missed her real parents.
Yeah. So, because that's just the kind of thing that happens in this world.
Yeah, sure.
And so this UFO comes in and uses an excuse that her adoptive mother, the queen of this planet, has gone sick and she needs to get over there and take over as ruler.
Yeah, or
but
at least
out,
like see her mother before she dies.
Yeah.
Right.
And so she flies back and like quits being the teacher to everyone's dismay and shock, especially Norimaki, who is constantly been like trying to date her and obsessed over her since the first episode. So they find an excuse to chase after them through space, and we find out it's all an evil plot by the nefarious glam rock looking man Dr. Mashirito.
Or at least in his first appearance he's
that's
very
true.
Glam rock.
Yeah, he goes from
after
glam rock
that,
to like
he becomes,
dictator.
Yeah, he is just Hitler with a cape. And instead of a swastika armband, it's just an armband that says his name on it.
Of
in
course.
English, of course.
Yeah, don't worry. Like, every staple of Toriyama fashion of wearing clothes with your own name on it is all over the place in this show.
To, to an insane degree, frankly. Literally every character, I think, at one point wears a shirt that has just their name plastered on the front in big, goofy letters. Like,
yeah. And Aurelie's friends, the her other friends for the middle schoolers are straight out of, like, the Burger King Kids Club. I know I say that a lot, but...
Well, it's just the one guy, really, who has glasses
that
are very...
The girl really really looks like she'd be into... It's just the... It's like the 80s fashion mixed with...
It's like, if you're an animated character wearing a vest, I think, and you look, like, kind of cartoony, then... I'd say you look kind of Burger King Kids Club. Like, specifically one of those, like, puffy vests that nobody wears anymore.
I feel like this should be a Burger King Kids Club podcast.
I think there'd be a lot of room to cover there. I'm sure there's a rich history of Burger King Kids Club, like, you know, mythos and stuff
today,
that we could really
dive
into.
Today we're going to talk about wheels.
Yeah, today we're going to talk about Kid Vid. And
Rex or whatever.
Yeah, I don't know.
Chomper.
Obviously the only one whose names I remember. Everyone else is just a fucking blank mannequin. Because, you know, Kid Vid, some deep characterization there.
Yeah,
but we're getting off track.
Kid Vid's parents died and he had to take a sword up against the... in vengeance against those who killed his father.
Yeah, right, exactly. Classic storyline there. But, I mean, honestly don't have a ton to say about this show. Like, it was fine. I don't think I was enjoying it as much as you were necessarily, which it's not like it's bad by any stretch. I don't know, maybe I could get into it if I gave it some more, like, episodes, but it, I don't know, just isn't really my thing for reasons that I'm struggling to even determine. Like, there are definitely things I like about it. There's a consistent joke where Senbai, like, his face changes design entirely when he's being serious, like, as though it's just from a different anime.
When he's serious and confident, like, all his, he just becomes, like, basically, like, what looks like a normal anime character man. Like,
yeah,
he's all, like,
right,
handsome
right.
and stuff when he's, like, trying to show off and trying to like, hit on Norimaki or something.
Yeah, or, like, congratulating himself for building a robot that is totally perfect.
Genius.
Yeah, it's, like, that's a great joke that I really like.
Yeah, lots of little creative fourth wall breaking, too.
Yeah, Jesus, there is not a fourth wall that Toriyama met that he didn't want to break. Like, good lord, there's so much fourth wall breaking in this show.
So, character complains that Aurelie has no nose, and then, of course...
No nostrils,
wait,
specifically.
I don't have any nostrils.
She has a
either.
Nose.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, one thing that's funny about this show to me, too, is, like... It's a pretty common joke that Toriyama can only draw, like, three faces, and that's more or less true. Like, there's some truth to that joke. Chi-Chi and Bulma are pretty much the same character with different haircuts and eye colors.
Yeah, if you change their hair,
But it's really interesting to see this show, because that still holds true, but they're different faces.
Yeah, that is really weird.
It's like
the style's pretty different. But...
Yeah, it's like seeing the evolution of Toriyama's, like, three faces design.
Yeah,
Here, you know, all the female characters look pretty much identical to each other, with except the haircuts, but they don't look like Bulma.
And they, one thing I love about it too is in a later Dr. Slump episode, they directly call that out, and they're like, like, another character puts on the wig of Midori and, like, impersonates her, and it's just like, oh, why do you look exactly the same? It's like, it's because he can only draw, like, two faces. Like, I just love that kind of direct call out. But it is hard to sum up the show because it's just kind of a whirlwind of crazy shit happening. There's so much character to, like, the backgrounds and, like, all the weird shit you see. Like, of course, like, in the foreground, you'll see, like, Godzilla crossing the street with, like, little boots on.
Yeah, Jesus. Like, any pop culture character from Japan is
Ultraman
referenced.
Just, like, clings to a tree and is, like, makes cicada sounds. It's
right.
What is happening?
I mean, Ultraman pulls up the fucking sun in the morning. Like, you got...
Yeah, right.
Second tier Gamera villains just as background fill in, and And there's, of course, a giant robot in the movie that is referred to directly as a mobile suit.
Yeah, that's right. And it kind of looks like a Dom with like some insectoid features.
Yeah, sort of, yeah. You know,
the movie, you know, had a pretty good, I mean, big surprise. The movie had higher quality animation. Although
yeah, the movie looks good.
Yeah, although it did not hesitate to show us some of the same shots over and over again.
Good lord, there's one shot. There was one shot of the slump, the spaceship that Senbai builds, flying past the camera, and it's a really nice shot, but the like fifth time you see it with a different background,
yeah,
it started to get Gundam Wing flashbacks a little bit.
Yeah, right. There's a great little moment where they're getting like shot to shit, and like everyone's going to battle stations in the ship except Arale, because she's like a kid, and
yeah, she's not in a battle station, she's just sitting there.
And so, and everyone in the battle stations, of course, it's exactly like the scene Star Wars where they're get into battle stations in
shooting
A New Hope
the TIE fighters.
I love that scene.
It's a classic.
And then they're like, they start getting their ship blasted and like kind of getting fucked up. And then they're just like, oh, wait a minute, Arale, go out and play with them. They all want to play war games. And because she's indestructible, and she just goes outside in a spacesuit with a little Gotchan, who's like this little
how do you even describe that character?
Thing.
She's like a cherub.
It's this weird little green cherub who flies around, who doesn't speaks in gibberish and
eats
can
everything.
Eat anything.
Yes.
And they both go outside and just start like kicking and destroying all of the enemies.
Yeah, this fleet of basically Galaga ships. They're all just bug like monster ships.
Yeah. And Gotchan is in this miniature little, it's just a ball from Mobile Suit Gundam.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Which is awesome. And he's just like, got this pissed off looking face, blasting. Oh, God. There's something about this show. Just like, I love the design, I love the world, and it's just something very unique. And I don't fault you for not quite getting into it or not quite liking it or whatever. I'm not going to act like it's like, you don't understand this.
You don't get
this show.
The high art that is.
You just don't get it. People just don't get Dr. Slump.
Yeah, I think that.
But
it is
something about it that really just gets it for me.
Yeah, and I can understand that. It is nice to see like something, you know, preceding Dragon Ball that is more directly silly and just doesn't take itself seriously for even a millisecond. I appreciate that aspect of it, certainly.
There's one thing I love about the character of Arale is, like, she is just, like, always really happy and just, like, always having a great time, just having fun. And pretty much you never, ever see her, like, sad. You definitely never see her sad or angry. She's, just, like, curious and having fun because she's all-powerful. She can just punch and destroy anything. She cannot be hurt at all. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, she's
then, like,
specifically stronger than Goku, Toriyama has stated.
Yeah. And in the Dragon Ball Super episode can like beat like Super Saiyan Blue Vegeta.
Yeah, with no problem, yeah.
Right. Oh, man. But then like there's one part at the end where she just gets angry, and it's, you kind of just know that like all hell is broken
the,
loose.
The shit has really hit the fan RLA is like, pissed off.
Yeah, if you make the insanely always happy person angry who's all powerful, you're just like, oh you've really stepped in it now. You're fucked.
Yeah, to mention one thing about that Dragon Ball Super episode that I found out about the other day, we watched it pre-dubbing, so I haven't seen the dubbed version, but apparently in that episode Dr. Mashirito comes back as a ghost. And he's released from hell, but in the Funimation dub, they make it so that he's released from the Home for Infinite Losers, which I really appreciate.
Just as a little callback to the old terrible censorship.
I love so much that they
really
decided
funny.
To call back to that stupid, stupid thing.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Also, frankly, I think Home for Infinite Losers is still a better title for the place where bad people go.
Yeah, I think in real life, too. If hell exists
right.
in real life, I hope
it
it's
should
actually
really
called
rebrand
Hitler.
As the Home for Infinite Losers. Satan, if you're listening, I can help you with that. So, yeah, and, you know, one last note is that I recently got another Toriyama-based thing that sort of takes place in the same world as Dragon Ball, arguably. I mean,
oh yeah.
Well, specifically, this is Jocko the Galactic Patrolman, which does explicitly take place in the same world as Dragon Ball. It doesn't just cross over because Jocko shows up in Dragon Ball Super. But yeah. I gotta say, like, reading that was just pleasant. Like, and it was similar to this. It's a little more like, you know, modern, refined Toriyama style.
Sure.
But it similarly just doesn't take itself seriously, like fourth wall breaking goofiness. And I'd love to see that animated at some point.
That'd be cool.
Kind of neat. Especially since it's not that long. Like, you could pretty easily just make that like a short movie.
And but, they kind of make it into a prequel of Deep Dragon Ball, right?
Yeah, yeah, totally. Also, incidentally, our last minisode where we covered Dragon Ball Super Broly, I mentioned that part of it was kind of an adaptation of Dragon Ball Minus. Having read Dragon Ball Minus now, literally like an hour after recording that episode, I can say it is an exact adaptation. That is not kind of an adaptation. It's the same.
That's cool.
Except then they also have Broly apparently fighting against Frieza at the end. Whereas in Minus, Goku just kind of leaves. But yeah, Jocko the Galactic Patrolman, check it out. Dr. Slump, honestly, check it out. It was fun.
Yeah, if you like goofy comedy, you know, there's a little bit of toilet humor, but it's nothing over the top.
Yeah, it's not that bad. You know, there is one thing I want to bring up about the movie, actually, before we go, which is in the movie, it turns out that Senbai has built his spaceship, the Slump, without any bathroom.
Oh, I fucking love that bit.
So they have to stop repeatedly on their journey at various planets so that they can relieve themselves. And on the first planet they stop on, they meet this like dinosaur. And then there's this scene of RLA and Gachan just playing with the dinosaur. What is that scene?
Like, I think it's just fun for little kids.
Yeah,
I think
right.
It's just like they're just having a goofy fun time, you know, with this dumb dinosaur. But the dinosaur is really creepy looking. Yeah. He kind of looks like one of Barney's friends, like BJ or whatever the name of was, with a green one. He's like really spiky and he's got a creepy face and he makes such a scary noise. He's just like,
I want to say the green Barney friend was Baby Bop, and I'm a little sad if I got that right.
That might be the female one. I don't know.
No, that's definitely the female one, but the green one was... I think I'm right on the money with that. I don't know why I'm like...
I won't challenge
Peter,
you
believe
on it.
Me. I know my Barney characters, damn it.
I do love that bit, though, because he uses it as an excuse to just like visit all these planets, and it's already like Senbei's just bragging about how he's a brilliant genius who's made the
who
perfect
makes
ship.
No mistakes, yeah. And then, of course, like, it's
wait
like,
a minute.
Oh, shit, we don't have a bathroom.
Oh, man.
Especially considering that the ship is fucking gigantic. That's a good little joke. Well, next week, we'll be getting to something that, you know, in theory will be less jokey, but who knows? The appearance of Cell in Dragon Ball Z.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm kind of excited because I really liked Cell and his whole arc.
Yeah, I'm excited to see how they do this and... Hopefully we won't get like too failured to death.
Yeah, right. Hopefully.
You know, and we're watching the original Funimation dub
of
it,
you know.
And the original run, you know. So
yes, as we've said many times,
for a lot of,
no Kai.
Oh yeah. Yeah, no Kai and all the dumb shit talk.
Yeah. So yeah, we'll be getting into that next week, but until then, I'm Michael Doak.
And I'm Peter Eby.
And this has been a Hyperspace Broadcast minisode. Thanks for listening.